All right. So what's next?
P&E agenda paper.
P&E?
Yeah. Agenda paper four.
Okay. We are now going to discuss agenda paper four on P&E. Proceeds before intended use.
Good afternoon. I'm back again. I'm hoping I don't have to sit for one full hour as initially scheduled. And
I'm hoping you do.
Yeah. So, as you may be aware, the exposure draft was issued on June 20th, and it's out there for comment. The board proposed these amendments in response to a request submitted to the interpretations committee, and as you may be aware, the committee discussed this issue for quite a long time before it came to the board. Those discussions did highlight that there is diversity in practice of how paragraph 17E is being applied, especially in a few industries. And to reduce that diversity, the board has proposed these amendments. So the board considered various alternative approaches of reducing the diversity as explained in the basis for conclusions of the exposure draft, and picked the proposed amendments to just prohibit entities from deducting proceeds from the cost of property, plant and equipment. With that, I would like to hear your views on the exposure draft.
Alberto.
We discussed this with all the preparers, and they all agreed that this is a sale. It does meet all the requirements in IFRS 15. There is a selling effort, whatever. So it's not like somebody giving money to reduce the cost of the asset. It's a sale. So we are perfectly in agreement with this. The only operational issue that they have raised is the cost of testing is capitalized. The cost of the asset. But when they start selling items produced during the testing phase, they have difficulties in deciding whether the testing cost is cost of sale or is still to be capitalized, or to distinguish which part should go one way and another. This is an operational problem they have, but for the rest, fine.
Cédric.
Thank you, Hans. Well, we also discussed that issue in our committee. And the first point was to make a kind of impact assessment, because we understand that the issue has been raised because in certain situations the revenue or the results, the benefits may be higher than the costs. And we are struggling with that assumption because in the different cases that we have investigated, which are probably rather in the manufacturing industry, the costs are marginal in proportion to the revenue. Sorry, are marginal in proportion to the costs, so that the issue never really happens. So there is no real need to fix that situation, and we agree that the solution which is proposed here is may not be very conceptual. It's a quick fix, but we also agree that the initial provision in the standard were also probably not that conceptual, but rather a practical one. But we were quite satisfied with that. And maybe we would be very interested to better understand what is the real need of changing the standard in that regard. And just to make sure also that the situation, the standard won't be changed for a reason which may not be in the standard setting area, but rather in the enforcement one, if there is difficulty in assessing what is a testing period. That's the first point. The second point is that we are concerned that such a quick fix may provide some difficulties, operational difficulties in assessing the costs, and that was probably the initial reason why it has been deducted from the cost instead of being recognized as revenue, since in the testing phase the cost allocation keys are not defined, so it's very difficult to assess which part of indirect cost to allocate to such revenue that would be recognized in the future. And if we would recognize real revenue according to IFRS 15, then why wouldn't we recognize some parts of the asset depreciation also? But by definition, the asset is not in service, so it won't be depreciated. So the relationship between the allocation of cost and the revenue is not very consistent with what usually applies for IFRS 15, and we are concerned that it may be operationally difficult to assess such costs, and finally the quick fix may be much more difficult to implement than the current situation. So that's the point. And finally, even if it's not maybe that clear under IS 38, we would like to make sure that such a change under IS 16, which is for tangible assets, may not taint on other standards like IS 38, because in that case, for production of intangible assets, especially for research development, for example, assets, we may have some issues with some revenue that may be much higher than for in case of IA 16. So just be cautious that it's not a new way to analyze such revenue.
Just a couple of things to respond to your questions on the cost allocation. I think we've had many questions during the process of developing the proposed amendments on cost allocation, you know, precisely the point you raised about depreciation, whether it is part of the cost of inventory that gets produced during testing. And what we tried to do is to have explanations in the basis for conclusions on that aspect. So, I mean, I would suggest please take a look at the basis for conclusions and see if you agree with the with our thought process there. And also, I mean, in terms of whether this has an effect on IAS 38, I think when we were looking at how the amendments, whether the amendments affect IAS 38 or not, I don't think there's anything quite similar in IAS 38 that would cause us to make a consequential amendment to IAS 38 as well. So I think we did look at whether there's going to be an impact on IAS 38. So I thought I'll just respond to those two aspects.
Thank you.
Thank you. We are not familiar with this type of situation, and therefore would like to understand more detail. Having said that, we think it's inappropriate not to include depreciation in the cost calculation of the item sold if they meet the definition of inventory. We think the definition of the cost of testing is still unclear.
Okay. Thanks, Hans. Well, I spoke to one of the preparers from a gold mining company, and I understand from a mining and extractive industries perspective, this is a big issue. So he shared some insight with me. So I think the practical issue is many mining companies tend to apply different units of account when it comes to determining when the asset is in, you know, the location, well, the condition, you know, for its to be available for use. So he shared with me, which is some public knowledge, that certain mining companies, you know, tend to be in the so-called testing phase for an extended period of time. Yeah. And so it's in those situations that you end up with significant amount of revenue, or rather proceeds, let's use that word, proceeds, which exceeds the costs. And so that's why you have the situation where, you know, if you were to take that against, well, against the asset, I guess in most cases you wouldn't end up with a negative asset, but still, on those items, you end up with this issue. So he shared with me some, well, sort of his thoughts to say that, you know, is the real issue here in terms of when you should be stopping and capitalizing and determining the unit of account, so when are certain items available for use. So the example that he gave as well, in a mining environment, you might find that you are already, you know, extracting ore, etc., but your crushing plant or the washing plant further down the line, you know, you still might be testing that. And so as a result, they conclude that the entire mine is still being tested. And the question would be, well, is that an appropriate, you know, outcome or not? So his concerns with this proposal is that if that practice continues, then they're going to, these mining companies potentially will still capitalize all these costs of testing. So going back to, I think, Alberto's question around, is it clear what is the cost of testing versus the cost of inventory? So, you know, are you supposed to say, well, if I wasn't producing any inventory, what would the costs be of just testing? But I don't know, you know, exactly how you do that. So I think there's a huge question mark around making that distinction, which could lead to a result which says all of these costs are all testing costs. They're all going to be capitalized, which means that your gross proceeds is going to end up as your margin, as your gross margin, because there aren't going to be any costs associated with that. So that could be an unintended outcome of this proposal. But is it really going to stop the practice of capitalizing the costs? So his concern is whether or not this is really addressing the real issue. Because I think picking up on some of the comments that were made, I think, by Cedric and a couple of the others, to say, well, you know, is this really an issue in practice? Because aren't the proceeds quite incidental? Well, I say, I think in these examples, they're not incidental, but it goes back to whether or not all of these proceeds are really from testing, or, you know, from selling something during testing. Now, this particular preparer in their organization, when they do their units of accounts are much smaller. So for them, they're saying is, well, this is not such a big deal from a practical perspective. But it goes back to in certain jurisdictions and certain companies where they are testing for 6 months, 8 months of extended periods of time.
It's also a way to reduce the tax liability. If you apply the revenue just towards your assets.
I guess so. Well, it depends on how the tax legislation is.
We are in urgent need of this standard.
Yeah. So I think that, yeah, there certainly are concerns whether or not this is really fixing or real addressing the real problem. And is it going to stop that? Or are we going to just see, as I say, huge amounts of revenue coming through with no cost attached to them? Or otherwise, are preparers going to adjust that cost of sales to give you a zero margin during this testing phase? So is concern going to be around manipulating what's going to go into cost of sales versus testing? So I think, yeah, I said he certainly is really concerned whether or not this is.
The zero margin argument is what I've heard from one of the mining preparers. You know, probably people might end up doing that. But I mean, it's like, I think on the cost piece, we've had like quite, I mean, we've heard many of them saying I think companies very well know what is the cost of what they are producing, whether it's in testing phase or after the testing phase. And I mean, I think during the development, what we heard from the IFRIC members is also that there are ways of deriving the cost and it's not a big issue. I mean, there are judgments involved there, which is what we've acknowledged in the basis for conclusion about cost allocation. And I mean, to your concern about whether there's only going to be revenue with no corresponding cost, I mean, with the standard saying that an entity would recognize the proceeds and the cost of producing those items, with that requirement specifically stated in the standard, can somebody avoid recognizing any costs in the P&L and take everything to the cost of testing is something which I need to figure out here.
Well, I think that certainly is the challenge, because costs of testing are required to be capitalized.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you can go down the route which then says, well, these are the costs of testing, and you have to capitalize those. So that's what I say is, how do you really distinguish? So the example that he gave me was, you could test whether or not the particular plant, say, has any leaks or anything by putting through waste through the plant. So if you do that, well, you can check to see if there are any leaks, and there clearly won't be any output that's of any value. So all of those costs clearly would be testing.
Possible, yeah.
Okay, so that's easy, and then you don't have this issue. Okay, so then he says what their mind does is when they test, because obviously you don't want to use, you know, more expensive ore for testing, and you're going to be using other, you know, chemicals and consumables. So what they do is that they would use, say, 20% of good stuff and 80% of waste, and they would put that through the plant. So that's where I suppose the mine would need to determine, is it 30% good, 70% waste, or, you know, whatever that proportion is. So in the example that he gave to me, he says, okay, they put through 20% good stuff, 80% waste, and they're hoping to get a particular yield, and they sell that. Now, as he says, is for selling that, I mean, the costs are incredibly high, because there's also, you know, you've got all your stripping costs. So, I mean, the costs of selling that first bit of ore are extremely high compared to the costs of selling all that much, much later, you know, further down the process. So now the question is, well, if we were happy that if you had no good stuff going through, all the costs are testing, are we now meant to be saying, well, if we have 20% of good stuff going through, my cost of electricity and labor, that's still going to be the same, whether or not I had 100% of waste or I've got 80% of waste going through. So does that mean that those labor costs, electricity, are costs of testing? Because I would have to incur those costs to do that testing. So now am I trying to say, but the only different cost would be I need to use different chemicals, different consumables, because I've got some good stuff going through and I want to extract, you know, the gold or whatever it is out of that. So are those costs now not testing costs? So you can see practically, what are we expecting entities to do in determining what is really a cost of testing versus cost of producing the ore? So I say it depends on where you put your emphasis.
We apply judgment and explain those judgments.
But and as I could see a case for people saying, well, actually, I'm still testing, so hence all of these costs are testing costs, and then that leaves you with nothing for your cost of sales. Or, as I say, going to...
What do you suggest we do? Because I don't think we want to not fix this because of the diversity we know exists in practice.
Well, I suppose to fix it is fixing it focusing on the units of account and when you stop capitalising costs and allowing, you know, all of these costs to really be treated as testing. So as I say, are they pushing, you know, the envelope too far in saying that these are all testing costs?
So I suppose it's only to say that, and by the way, the first thing I'll say today, as I realise it's very early in the comment period, so we don't expect you all to have all your views, but it's incredibly helpful for us, by the way, to already ask you to give some opinions. So some of this is hopefully just to throw out questions even today that you mightn't have got as far off, but just what you say, don't get me wrong, part of what we've explained in the basis is that we heard part of the work that was done was that there clearly is very big diversity in the point at which people stop capitalising call that started appreciating. The Interpretations Committee did think about that approach and they explored whether they thought that was a way to go. And the basis explains how they were thinking about going about that and the reasons why they didn't go there. And so I suppose it will be interesting, and it'll be that for example, if hopefully, you know, we've explained that quite well. So if when we put this out, people think, no, you should have gone about it that route, and then but then can go on to explain how we could make that work, then I think, because at least it wasn't something that wasn't thought about. It was thought about quite long and hard, and the basis explains why we didn't go
I think that would be really helpful, because the reason why I say what would you do, it's not being difficult. It's because I sat through all the Interpretation Committee meetings, and I know we went round and round and round in circles. Yeah. And I, from memory, mining is one of the big areas where this comes up.
Well, I think so. I think for other areas, South it's Africa not likely to helpful. Be a big thing.
Yeah, no, it would be great.
I think South African feedback on how we might
or Canadian, we have another mining expert.
Australia or Linda. I mean, because I think you will have really direct experience in your jurisdictions, which will be helpful to us.
I'll just make one final comment, only to throw it out there just in case it informs any further discussion. But so I understand all that you're saying, Kim, sort of thinking about cost allocation, how to do it. What I heard you focus on a lot was kind of almost the starting point being cost of testing. How do I work out how much is cost of testing? If I were thinking about this, and I don't know, I might actually start almost from the other side. If it's the point where proceeds have happened, I might think about the cost of producing that and go into IS2. And maybe focus on what identify the costs that I think are my costs of producing that inventory, and then whatever else is there, if it's involved in testing, it would be left over.
Well, I suppose maybe just to respond to that is that, you know, in my example with the 2080, do we then say, well, actually, all of the electricity, all of that labour, all of the consumables was all to produce the output that I was able to sell. So now does all of it become cost of sales? Is that the consequence? And then, as I say, in these environments where, well, put it this way, according to this particular preparer, he believes that if you are applying I-16 correctly, as in you're not, you know, waiting so long until you stop capitalizing, then he's saying is that you would actually always be selling that output at a loss. So that's what he's saying.
Yeah.
And so then he's saying as well, again, looking at, saying in IFRS 15, you know, goes back to, I think, some of the alternative views that were expressed. You know, is this really part of the, you know, normal operating activity? So are you really into IFRS 15 where you made a conscious effort to sell this output at a loss? And they're saying as well, no, it's meant to be incidental while you're testing.
So again, I'd only throw out there that in IS2, obviously, there are some requirements to try to help you work out what are your costs of inventory, even in scenarios where you've got joint products being produced, etc., to work out that you're not, say, just allocating all of the costs maybe to one item, not to the other. So it's not to say that's what we're interested in. It's not to say that the answers are maybe all there and that's what we'll hear back. At least as the starting point, we thought there's already quite a bit there. There's already must be a really quite a lot of judgment to be applied in applying both IS2 and IS16 around costs in particular situations. So it was really to say, when we put it out to comment, is this a scenario that we think goes way beyond the other judgments that we need and something more is needed? So.
It sounds like the feedback for you is that it's not clear enough in the ED that you need to go look at two and allocate the costs people are focusing on the testing. But I'd also just agree, I mean, that issue about allocating costs is no different to anyone who's in a got a learning curve environment where the costs of the first lot are so much higher, and then as you get through and you've got a big batch of something you're going to do, the costs of the later ones are there, and there's already ways that people work out how to defer some of those costs to match, so I'm not sure that's going to be terribly different.
And on that point, just briefly, for surface mining's got its very own interpretation that says make a reasonable and systematic allocation of cost if the costs relate to producing inventories and to bringing the PP&E to its condition intended by management. So I'm not sure why a mining expert in an engineering sense, but why subsurface mining should have a different approach. Can't you make a reasonable and systematic allocation?
Linda?
Yeah, so let's talk about mining. So to continue the conversation, thank you, Kim, for setting that up. So just to give you context, I don't know if you guys have been involved in all of our discussions. So the IFRS discussion groups had their first conversation on this issue in December of 2014. So we have been discussing it for a while. And with the last two conversations we had with talking about the proposed amendments were in May of 2016 and November of 2016. And I have similarly had the pleasure of seeing through all those conversations. So it's not so much that we disagree with your proposal, but rather we would say that potentially you need more guidance in IAS 2, mm-hmm, to avoid wild ass interpretations. The fact is that some of our stakeholders tell us that the biggest single expense is depreciation. And if you're still in pre-production, then you're not depreciating the asset. So what's the risk to users? Well, to give you further context, I've talked before about the number of foreign private issuers we have, and so just looking at that population, so those would be dual listed entities. They're listed in Canada and they're listed in the US. So we have about 300 of those, and over a third of them are mining. So they get a fair amount of visibility in terms of raising capital and on both sides of the border. So our concern would be that users get the statements and they misinterpret the results of these sales, quite frankly, and they use those as a predictor for future sales, mm-hmm, in terms of either quantum of sales or margin. Mm-hmm. So rather than focus on yes or no, we don't agree, we'd argue that either you need to look at IAS 2 or you need to create some disclosure requirements to say, here's what we did in the period, and big red flags, this is pre-production, because we actually have anecdotal evidence of these pre-production sales when that mine never goes forward commercially. So assuming it's material to the entity. So, and we acknowledge that the predominant practice is the alternative view, we get it. I'm less concerned about having to deal with that change in practice and more concerned that the users get the information they need to properly interpret what's happening here.
One point that I'll just again mention for all those that are coming on, because it's been mentioned a couple of times now, is depreciation. And I'll only put out the chance, it's discussed on the basis, and again, it's there only to say if the board's wrong, then tell us. But I suppose, given that we're talking about the stage where an asset is still being made ready for use, in theory it's not reached the point where it's actually ready to do what it's supposed to do, our thought was surely the depreciation, there is no, by definition, no depreciation, right, but surely even the consumption of the asset shouldn't be very big. And if it is very big, maybe that's a sign that it's already ready for use.
Well, that's
and maybe you should have stopped capitalizing and started depreciating.
No, we actually think that this proposal would bring that practice to light. So right, we're prepared to be supportive of it. We are.
Yeah.
And again, very early days. We haven't gone back to our groups and said, okay, now what do you think of these words and, whatever. But we're just pointing out a concern based on an early read.
And I mean, also in relation to that disclosure piece, and in the basis, we tried to also explain that if that testing proceeds are material to the financial statements,
and
the margin is probably not going to be the same as what it's going to be in the future. We would expect that it's disclosed in IFRS 15, the part of disclosures that this is a different kind of revenue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Some AOC members provided initial views expressing some concerns about the proposal, so I'd like to make some concerns. First concern is about that this proposal would be in conflict with the requirement in IAS 16 that directly attributable costs should be included in the cost of PPE, because they believe that cost of producing items that are sold during the testing period is also an example of directly attributable costs. However, according to this proposal, this cost is going to be recognized in P&L. And second concern is that the proposal is not clear about which costs should be recognized in P&L. Reading BC9 of the ED, it seems that costs of abnormal amounts of wasted material are also the costs that should be included in P&L. However, reading paragraph 28 as proposed, it appears that only the cost of producing an item is included in P&L. So there should be some clarification of this. And thirdly, the proposal is to clarify whether paragraph 28 also considers items that are yet to be sold. They view that the proposal should be all-inclusive and not limited to the cost of producing an item that have been sold. So we need to clarify this.
Would you suggest not doing anything then, or would you suggest doing something different?
Too early to say.
I haven't suggested any alternatives, but they just expressed some deep concerns about this proposal.
Christine?
Okay. It is with some trepidation that I weigh into what appears to be a land strewn with landmines. So I'll just be very high level and just say that my understanding is that the change that is being proposed, particularly with respect to revenue, would result in the guidance in IFRS to be more consistent with the current guidance in US GAAP. And so in the interest of alignment, I think this would be a good change, but I'm going to leave the whole mining situation aside.
Okay. Andrew?
Thanks. So we issued the draft FRAG comment letter yesterday, which basically supports the proposal. I sat through many of the interpretations committee discussions trying to answer the narrower question about just the how to account for the excess of proceeds above the cost of testing, and that seemed to be rather hard to answer the narrower question in isolation, partly because it puts so much pressure on what exactly do we mean by testing. The discussion became incredibly convoluted. So we'll see what response we get. Just to make a few points I don't think have been made already. On IS 38, you said you couldn't see anything that might justify or call for a consequential amendment. I think IS 38 is totally silent on proceeds. I mean, to me, that does rather raise the question as to if there are proceeds, how do you account for them? So we've included a question to constituents in our draft comment letter, basically asking, does this happen at a material level? And if so, how do you account for it? Focused on the development stage of intangible assets, which I assume is where proceeds might or might not arise. So we'll see what comes back from that. We weren't quite sure why you felt a need to add a new definition of testing. Doesn't this proposal sort of take the pressure off the definition? Not we necessarily object to it, we just don't see why it is necessary. So perhaps you could answer that. But this would seem to us to take the pressure off the definition of testing. Because the accounting for proceeds isn't linked to whether they come from testing or from some other activity any longer. And finally, it's kind of a detailed point, but if you look at how the IS 16 would now read with the new paragraph 20A, straight after paragraph 21 says don't deduct any income from incidental activities because they're not part of the necessary activity. That seems kind of redundant if you don't deduct any proceeds from any activity at all. So I think just that conjunction of guidance and confusion that could be clarified.
So China is still compiling their comment letter, but they said they have a little concern about the proposal.
Okay, any further comments? All right. Thank you.